So joining us on the line for his usual weekly interview is the former Leeds United chairman, Ken Bates. Ken, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Good stuff.
In a lovely, quiet Portofino, speculating and thinking about it, and eagerly awaiting your phone call.
Sounds lovely. Well, we'll start off, as ever, by discussing Leeds United. Of course, the international break, no football this week, but I think one of the big stories that's come out is regarding the training ground and Leeds United looking at a possible construction of a new city centre training ground for the club. Would you think that would be a good move to move away from Thorpe Arch and move closer to the Elland Road home?
I think it's a fantastic idea. When I was young, I was driving in Thorpe Arch, and it took a two-thirds of a day out of your life for a 2 or 3 hour meeting. And it's out of the sticks, it's hard to get to. The idea of bringing it back to the city centre, fantastic. Particularly, they're talking about the Leeds Community Village and using it as a springboard for local athletes and kids. It's a superb idea. And the chairman is to be complimented on his original idea and proposal. And also, all power to the Leeds City Council, who are enthusiastically looking into supporting it. And if they want it to happen, they can happen. They own the land. They say subject to planning permission. Well, Leeds City Council gives the planning permission. So it should be a formality. Great idea. Because also means that you can have greater mingling, you know, making it part of a family instead of being stuck out in the sticks somewhere.
And of course, Thorpe Arch is a state-of-the-art facility, as we know. Is that something that, you know, Leeds should look to replicate if they do move closer and build on this land?
Yeah, well, Thorpe Arch is, what, 20 years old? The new one will improve on that because it'll have the state-of-the-art and all the improved technology and knowledge, experience that we have acquired in the last 20 years. But also be easier for kids to go and train, parents to go and watch their kids, create a bigger and better and closer family atmosphere. We are Leeds in more ways than one. A tremendous idea. Sooner the better.
Would you say then that community, that family kind of value would be important to Leeds if they were to look at and move and build this new training ground closer?
I mean, there's a bit there now, but it'd be, of course, it would grow. We enhanced it, right in Leeds Football Club, right in the centre of Leeds. That's what you really want. It's fantastic. Yeah, can't wait. I hope it all goes well and smoothly. Meanwhile, back to the first team. Come on, lads, get your finger out. Get tight to the back. You conceded 6 goals in 2 games. Unlike you, they get on with it. They get back in the Premiership. And then with all the money, the hundreds of millions that comes in, the billions that comes into the Premiership, I need to get 1-5% of it, then there'll be the money there to do everything that's needed, everything that makes Leeds onto a really great club. After the travails for the last 10, 15 years.
And of course, as we mentioned earlier, it has been that international break this weekend. England, of course, qualifying for the World Cup. But a bit of an issue is there's a bit of an apathy that England weren't in the top 10 nations requesting tickets to the World Cup. Is that a concern for the Football Association, for Gareth Southgate?
Well, I can quite understand it. First of all, very few people speak Russian. How many Russians speak English? Secondly, Russia is a very big country. So the cost of internal travel would be very expensive. Thirdly, we saw in Marseille last year that Russian thugs were ganging up to attack other countries' supporters, particularly the British. They said, do we need it? Is it worth it? let's watch it on television. I mean, Russia is a totalitarian state. You don't know what justice there is. You don't understand the rules, the regulations. I must confess, if I was still in football, I wouldn't be going there. I'd be in the south of France or Italy, watching on the box. So I don't think there's any... And also, if you think about it, England haven't been playing... I mean, they've done well, but they haven't been playing interesting opposition. I mean, they're talking about, you know, the poor Gates recently, but we'd already qualified. We're playing some two-bob country. Money's tight. Do you want to spend all the way, if you would live in Lancashire or Northumberland, all the way down to London to see, you know, basically a friendly, could be qualified. So I think people are too quick to criticise and pick on things. People have to get their priorities right. I say money is tight. It's in the summer. You can't take your family on a family holiday in Russia, can you? So your mother, father and two kids, you've got four tickets to the game, if you can get them, four air tickets, four hotel beds. So do you go on your own, leave your wife and kids and her family behind? Or do you take them on their family holiday? I think that's a fair comment. They're just somebody just stirring up stories, For example, I'm going to the point of it, it's Arnold Weinstein, a fellow in Hollywood that's being accused of taking advantage of his position against female actresses. Well, I'm sick of watching it. It's been on for 3 days now. Is that the most important story in the world? Well, on a footballing side, is the fact that we're taking up less tickets and other people. Is that the most important story in the world? I said, well, China hasn't even qualified. They're going. Well, China, you go anywhere. Anywhere and everywhere. They're clogging up the roads all over Europe. Good luck to them. Maybe they want to see whether Russian communism is better than Chinese communism. Who knows?
And then away from football, of course, the talk is in the news about Brexit as ever. The latest news to come out is that the UK is to wait until the last moment to spend on a no-deal plan in regards to Brexit. Would that be a concern for the country if that's kind of the approach that they took?
Now, let's just put it in perspective. Now I'm talking as a businessman of some 60-odd years' experience. When you're negotiating your deal, you keep your cards close to your chest until you go behind closed doors. You don't discuss it in public. And I noticed it both when I was chairman of Chelsea and chairman of Leeds. If somebody shouts their mouth off in the press, what they're going to do, what they're not going to do, they normally don't do anything. All the best deal is done behind closed doors. Nobody knew that Massimo Cellino was going to sell a share of Leeds to the gentleman whose name I can remember, the Italian firm. And it was done. That's how you do business. You don't stand on the soapbox and in the square at the local town saying, I'm going to do the other. And in my opinion, this is where the Europeans have been very stupid. This fellow Dornier and Schultz and Juncker shouting their head off about, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we'll smash you, we'll destroy you, we'll punish you. It's a great way to start business, isn't it? Because if somebody threatens you and you call their bluff, they've got nothing. Now, the fact of the matter is, Britain's contribution to the EU, which is very substantial, has kept the EU going. Little countries like Estonia, Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, they rely on their share for Britain's contribution to keep them going. So when the idiot Dornier, or Dornier his name is, and Schultz and Juncker start threatening us, what's the British response? We tell them to bugger off. And what is happening, I believe, behind the scenes, is an awful lot of work going on. Civil servants are meeting civil servants. Juncker makes some stupid statement, and the British civil servants, legal civil servants, say to the European civil servants, where's the legal basis for Mr. Juncker's statement? But they say it behind closed doors. Meanwhile, Jeremy Corbyn, who hasn't done a day's work in his life, hasn't done a decent job in the real world in his life, pontificating shouts at himself in the House of Commons, really confirming what everybody knows already. He's a total pillock. He couldn't run an egg and spoon race. So imagine him trying to run the country. I can see the civil servants committing suicide. I was listening to him for a couple of days. No, the fact of the matter is, I believe a lot of things going on behind the scenes. And the Europeans are conscious of their own weaknesses and their own strengths. And also conscious of the UK's strengths and weaknesses. We need them, they need us. You can't bully. You can only bully if you hold all the cards. I've got nothing. If you look at the three things talking about, first of all, European citizens in the UK. Right. But nobody in Europe can talk about the UK's residents, UK citizens' rights in Europe. But the answer is dead easy. The same applies both ways. Whatever a European citizen gets in the UK, the UK citizen gets in Europe. Box ticked, no problem. What is the problem? Second one is the so-called divorce bill. Well, how can you price any payment to be made, if any? You don't walk into a shop and the shopkeeper says, well, give me 100 quid. And you say, well, what for? And he said, well, give me 100 quid and I'll tell you. Doesn't work, does it? Well, that's what the Europeans are saying. Well, if you're not European, idiots like Juncker and Marnier and Schultz. The only real problem we have is Ireland. The border between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic. But I believe if the British government sit down with the Irish government, they can work it out. Because they know the problems and situations arising. Some pillock in Luxembourg doesn't have no idea what's going on. Or Brussels. Or Strasbourg. But Dublin and London know. Dublin and Belfast know. And I believe they should sit down, work out the deal there, which keeps the Irish nationalists happy and the Ulster Union is happy. They've proved since the peace agreement they can work together and continue to work together. Not dragging the past all the time. What happened in the 1800, the 1900 or 1917? Okay, it happened. You don't even get on with it. I personally, I'm not sure I know the answer myself. I don't think it's a Berlin Wall situation. We towered mounted my machine guns and Irish soldiers and British soldiers and Irish civil soldiers. That's rubbish. We can work it out. It may very well be what we'll have to do is to allow free movement between Eire and Northern Ireland, Ulster. But then when people move from Ulster to the mainland, we may have to institute checks there. So if people are trying to get into England by the back door, say a Russian or a German or whatever, goes to Ireland, then tries to get in, or illegal immigrants from Libya or Dudar, we check them in Belfast. Or if they're coming across from Dunleary or Wexford or Rosslare, then they check on there. But between Ulster and the Irish Republic, it should be as smooth as possible. We might even have a free trade tariff-free agreement on that area. So if the Europeans are bloody stupid, want to use tariffs, blah, 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 well, Ireland has one vote. They can block any decision. They say no. We'll only vote for that, providing it doesn't apply between England and Ireland. England or UK and ERA. That might be the solution. Drinks all around. Well done, Bates. Next point. Just to show you how forward-thinking Radio Yorkshire and TV Yorkshire are, I was watching on TV this week when the founder of the Yorkshire Party was on TV, national TV, with two senior people in Yorkshire saying that they want devolution and sort of home rule for Yorkshire. We were saying that 2 years ago when Aggies Basher Sturgeon was banging about devolution of Ireland and this and that, sorry, Scotland, and this and that and the other, and blah, blah, blah. Hang on. What is all this thing about Scotland? If I remember rightly, 7-9 years ago, the two big Scottish banks, Royal Bank of Scotland, Bank of Scotland, both went bust. Had to be bailed out by England, by English money and the English Parliament. And even today they're subsidised. Scotland's got free education and, that's what they have. It's paid for by the English taxpayer. Every Scottish resident gets a subsidy of about £1,500 a year, which is paid for by the English taxpayer, because they don't raise enough money in taxes and other income on their own. Which is why dear Nicola, is backtracking on independence at the moment, because he won't realise where the bloody money's going to come from. Because independence means independence. In fact, I tell a little story, and it don't. I was on holiday in Greece with a family. My 11-year-old son came up to me. I was sitting on the beach reading a book and said, Daddy, yes, son, I've been talking to Catherine, that was his elder sister, and we think we'd like to be independent. I said, well, what do you mean, independent? Well, you know, Daddy, you and Mummy decide everything and we go along and, we think we're old enough to, we'd like to make our own decisions and do what we want to do. I said, okay, son, you've got it, no problem. His face looked, heard him rushing, Catherine, Daddy says you're going to be independent, we can be independent, everything's okay. So I sat in the car and reading my book. A couple of hours later, Robert, my son, eldest son, wandered back. I said, Robert, now you're independent. Yes, Daddy, thank you. I said, can I ask you that? He said, yes. Yeah, of course. I said, what do you do for money? He said, what do you mean? I said, what are you going to do for money? You're independent now. You don't need me and Mummy. What were you? And his face looked blank. He stared at me. He said, we're not going to be independent at all, are we? I said, no, you're not, son. Lesson number one. Lesson number one. So if Scotland will be independent, they will be independent on their own. And just watch all the Scots rushing south before the borders close. And what I haven't also haven't told you is the two big Scottish banks have already made contingency plans to relocate a lot of their operations in London. So having said that, let's move across to what I was talking about earlier, Yorkshire. Yorkshire is a dynamic county. Suzanne and I fell in love with it soon after we arrived, and despite the turbulent times, never allow prejudice to interfere with your judgment. Yorkshire is a lovely area, lovely part of the world, lovely part of England. And they are, Yorkshire is very rich, it's very prosperous, growing fast. So why should Yorkshire have to answer some two-bob bloody civil servant working in London and living in Surrey, telling people in Hunslet and Bradford and Huddersfield what to do? Why can't it be decided in Leeds and Harrogate and York? I'll tell you this much, that the standard of living, the prosperity, be far greater than Scotland. After all, who wants to eat a haggis when you can eat a Yorkshire pudding? Food for thought. And I think we should all support the idea of a devolved Yorkshire. Yorkshire is bigger than bloody Wales. As bad as bigger than Ulster. So why can't Yorkshire be not independent, but devolved, have its own powers, like London has, under the Mayor of London? There's food for thought. Now come on, William Hague, the Yorkshireman who's fallen asleep lately. Come on, come out of retirement. Wear a wig. Start supporting Yorkshire and the Yorkshireman. Oh, and the Yorkshire ladies, of course. Send your letters in to Yorkshire Evening Post and Yorkshire Post and do the phone-ins on Plantagenet Media, which is the parent company of Yorkshire Radio, TV Radio, and Proper Sport. And finally, of course, congratulations to the Leeds Rugby League for winning the English Championship. Well done, lads.
Well, Ken, as ever, thank you for joining us, and we will speak to you at the same time next week.
My pleasure.